Over spring break, I was sitting with my parents in the airport, about to leave for a family vacation, and I couldn't stop thinking, man, this might be the last spring break of my entire life. So I turned to my mother and I said, man, this might be the last spring break of my entire life. So she thought for a second, she replied to me, good, that's it, no more fun for you. You can't goof off anymore, only work. And my dad, who was sitting next to us, then had to chime in. You know, in India, we never had spring break. More like spring, let's go back to the office. This conversation got me really thinking about just how big a change is in store for us. And it got me thinking about all the big lessons and epiphanies I've had over the last couple of years. I'll start at the beginning, freshman year. Things started out rough for me. About 2 weeks in the classes, I drank so much soda one night that I was so hyper, came back to my room and I knocked my computer off my desk, and I broke the period key off my laptop. Just my luck, I had a response paper due for Professor Smith's intro to philosophy class the next day. So with no time to waste and no period key to be found, I actually ended up having to write my response with no question, or only with question marks and exclamation marks. Here is an actual excerpt from that essay. What do I think about Kant? Kant's great! How does one feel about Kant? In Kant's view, a priori intuitions and concepts provide us with some a priori knowledge, which also provides the framework for our a posterior knowledge. The next class, Professor Smith came up to me and he told me, Pan, your response doesn't make any sense. You need to start punctuating like a normal human being. Needless to say, I got a D- on that paper. Needless to say, Professor Smith no longer teaches at Amherst. And that's when I learned the value of punctuation. One of my favorite classes freshman year was Professor O'Connell's, here he is, Contemporary American Literature class. Professor O'Connell has led a rich, traveled life. He's taught and done work all over the world, and in class he loves to tell stories about his career and his life. One day I was teaching impoverished, destitute teenagers in rural Kentucky, or one day I was teaching impoverished, on the breadline children in Cambridge, and I saw this beautiful woman on the dance floor, so I went up to her and I said, marry me. And in 6 months, she was my wife. I just couldn't take this anymore one day, so I had to ask him if any of these stories were actually true. So as he started, one day I was teaching impoverished wizards at Hogwarts School of Wizardry. I interrupted him and I asked him if he was actually just BSing us. Professor O'Connell said, Pan, I really appreciate your willingness to question the truth. And I replied, thank you, but I have to know, did any of this stuff actually happen? Professor O'Connell then said, let me ask you a question first, Pan, where are you from? I said, I'm from D.C. He then started, one day I was teaching impoverished adolescents in Southwest D.C. And that's when I realized the power of telling a good story. Sophomore year, I took the Art of Ruling with Hadley Arkes. Professor Arkes, with his conservative outlook, his impeccable attire, his big mustache, the big glasses, seems on the surface a pretty square guy. However, one day in class, we got into a heated debate about rap music. About like the censorship of rap music, more specifically. And though my first instinct told me Professor Arkes didn't know the last thing about rap, in class he was more than holding his own against us college students. He ended that day with one of the most memorable quotes from my time here at Amherst. As we were leaving class, Professor Arkes stood up and he said, in the words of my good friend Snoop Dogg, sit on this bitch. And that's when I learned the true meaning of never judge a book by its cover. I have a serious problem with staying awake in class, and it dogs me to this day. I used to be really concerned about this problem until one day President Marx graced a Choral Society concert with his presence. He came with his family, his daughter, everyone was there, and it was great to see him at a music event. I could tell he was really enjoying himself because he was nodding. He was nodding vigorously to the music. It wasn't until he awkwardly dropped his program, looked around like a deer in the headlights, to make sure nobody had seen him, that I recognized that the big guy was just a little tired. And that's when I learned that even the president of the fairest college in the land gets tired, and sometimes it's okay to fall asleep at things. So a lot of you out there are thinking, I am so scared of leaving Amherst. How have my experiences here actually prepared me for the real world? And I want to reassure you that in spite of swine flu, climate change, the fall of the dollar, or the rise of the Decepticons, we will be all right when we leave Amherst. If you are sitting there thinking, I am scared of starting a new life where I won't have a job or money, where there's a very real possibility I'm going to be living in a cardboard box next year, tell yourself that if you've ever lived in the socials, a cardboard box is an upgrade. Some people are telling themselves, I'm scared to live in a world where I'll have to buy my own food and cook for myself. Well, if you've ever been to Val on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or even a Thursday night, you'll be thankful you're preparing your own food. Some people are thinking, man, I'm scared for my love life when I leave Amherst. I have one word for you, Craigslist. Finally, if you're thinking, I am scared to live in a world where I will have to apply my liberal arts education to real world scenarios and actual job, tell yourself that I may not know facts or have real skills, but I have Amherst College, class of 2009, written on my diploma, and that's a hell of a lot better than anyone from Williams College can say. Thank you.